evening, everyone, and welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. A vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer the questions of why. This vlogcast was started as a combination of spite and Streisand effect when somebody on Facebook said, stop posting all that negativity and bringing your skepticism into this whole damn thing because we're just having fun. When they were obviously posting stuff on Facebook that was just wrong. That's the way things work around over here. It is Sunday morning here on the eastern seaboard of the U.S. It is 2014, 6 April. This is episode Spinal Tap. Thank you for joining us. I am your host. I am Shujin Tribble from Facebook, amongst other places. You can find me pretty much anywhere. And as some people finally found me, yes, I am also known as Sparkle Diggle Darkle Pony over on Thank God I'm Atheist. And believe it or not, somebody found me on Second Life to ask, wow. I know this is a weird question, but are you? Yes, I am.
That's funny. We're not 2 minutes on the show and we're already broken. This is going to be a good night.
I was born in Brooklyn, raised on Long Island. I was raised in an Italian Roman Catholic household. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and I guess a devout heathen atheist, I guess is the best way to put it. Joining us this evening is Witchy Bunny.
Hello, everyone. My name is Witchy. I am living currently in the Philadelphia area, born and raised here. That is not an invite to a song. Thank you. I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, currently pretty much sitting at agnostic and seeing what's going on out there.
Also, Unrenown Tech.
Hi, folks. Unrenown Tech down here in Southern Maryland, and I was raised with a mixed background, believed several faiths, and studied others, and I've come to realize that, wow, you know, none of them are right.
Sorry about that. And Dallin?
Good evening, folks. I guess I am rounding out the multicultural portion of the show by being the show's token Canadian.
Hey.
What?
What's that about?
Don't get me started, eh?
I'll take some maple syrup.
Oh, I'll take the beer instead. Born and raised Lutheran, but thankfully was encouraged at a young age to always keep an open mind and to never stop learning. For that, I am grateful to my parents for that. Faith was never a huge thing in my household, and again, for that, I'm very grateful because making the transition from believer to agnostic to, if I want to use the Dawkins scale, and I know a lot of people don't like it, but yeah, I'm so close to full atheist, but as far as you can get anyways. My mission, if you call it, in life now is to learn and see things for myself. And I've taken very small steps in this journey, but at least I've started it.
Very cool. All right, for those of you that are watching at this point, of course, live, thank you very kindly. We'll see how quickly we can get through the topic tonight. I have officially listed the episode as 90 minutes because it's what tends to be happening anyway, and truthfully, why fight against the stream sometimes?
Because I also don't cross them.
I had a feeling somebody was going to do that. If you have questions, comments, of course, if you are with us live right now, please feel free to join us. If you'd like to share off the link with folks, I will be keeping tabs on my G Plus and Gmail accounts. So if anybody's trying to get in, you know, we'll see what we can do about that. If you'd like to email stuff into us, by all means, feel free. You can send it to me at shujintribble@gmail.com. Shujintribble, all one word. And if you're watching live with us, please take advantage of the question and answer app that is on the page for you right there. In the meantime, let me recap the email that had come from S. Ross, one of our longtime watchers and questioner, and thank you for that, by the way. The email is itself a little bit long, but I was able to boil it down to a couple of key points, and that's really what it all comes down to. The email says this. Love, fairness, and altruism are all ideals that drive the actions of persons and societies. Yet these concepts are not evolutionary, meaning, as they manifest themselves in a person's actions, it does not necessarily contribute to or advance that person's survival or superiority under any natural selection process. In fact, history show that people motivated by these concepts often sacrifice their time, their fortunes, and even their lives. We say they are real, but we cannot examine them scientifically. So, to atheists, is there reality beyond the physical? If we define these ideals as merely goals in man's quest for perfection, does not then perfection, quote-unquote, become the reality that becomes the focus of our questions? So, we're going to try to go through the idea of what is reality, how do these nebulous concepts and ideals fit into the way that a skeptic, an atheist, a non-theistic personality might view these things, and try to come to a little bit of an understanding of, well, again, why? Why is the question relevant, and what can we glean from it all on top of, you know, what is there really to think about it? So before I even go ahead and deal with this stuff first, because, you know, as the host, I typically end up monopolizing time because, you know, my show, my rules. And I'm vain. I will admit it. So which one of you guys wants to take first crack at any of these particular items? And I want you to kind of narrow it down to a particular chunk in what's going on with this, because there's five or six different things that we're going to be able to hit on this. Or do I just have to start asking for volunteers?
Oh, boy.
All right, Dallin, you had the last word there. I'm giving you the first word now.
Thank you very much. And I do this again. Why?
Because DJ Roll Zero, that's why.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, I'm part of that, too. I am by no means an authority on anything to do with biology or anything like that, but a lot of what I've read recently, including Dawkins and a few others, seems to suggest that we are social creatures. We gather in society. And while, like what S. Ross said, a lot of what he talked about, yes, it's not self-serving, but it does serve the society in which we live. And if you look at, look at a pride of lions. They all know their place, and they all do contribute to the group. So there must be some kind of instinctual, something so deep down that we consciously can't realize or consciously can't detect it. But something to say that if I do this, my society improves, and therefore I live more comfortably. I want to say it's like an instinctual level biological imperative. But, you know, I didn't even take biology in high school. Sorry. The dead frog, I squicked, I got the hell out, I decided to go with chemistry and physics. So,
by the way, dead frog intestines are like rubber bands.
Yeah, that was the thing, and we always knew when the frogs were coming out because the entire upper floor of my high school smelled like formaldehyde.
Oh, that's not a good time.
No, it certainly wasn't. But that is everything I've read. Is it? You look at behaviors in nature where you have packs or gatherings. You have like packs of wolves, prides of lions. Anything in which there is a observable hierarchy, and while there are challenges inside of that hierarchy on occasion, it's not always going on. Otherwise, all of your societies are going to tear themselves apart. So there must be something very, very deep buried in any kind of biological psyche that says, by performing something altruistic, by performing something that does not benefit me directly, but benefits my society as a whole, and I hate to use this term, but holistically, and by that I mean in a roundabout way, it will benefit me in the end.
See where you're going there. Tech, you wanted to, I'm kind of getting a funny feeling that you've got something you want to add on to that one too.
Oh, you were talking about primordial or primal. we've actually had scientists over at the National Institute of Health, doctors and scientists, take MRIs, which are magnetic resonance imaging scans of the human brain. Mm-hmm. What this allows doctors to do is see the portions of the brain that become active and identify them. And we've actually identified specific portions of the brain that are tied into key aspects of humans in general. And what they found is when they were doing testing for altruism, and for those who don't know what altruism means, it means selflessness, selfless acts. And they take many, many forms. When people were given to performing pure monetary rewards or charitable donations, they were just, you know, just donating for donating's sake. What happened was, is there was this section of the brain, and I actually wrote this down, so forgive me here, mesolimbic. And it's a reward pathway of the brain. It's very primitive portion of the brain. And it is usually active with regards to food or sex. So it's a pleasurable center of the brain, well, at least responses-wise. But when they had people who acted altruistically in terms of placing other people's interests ahead of their own, because they were generally interested in the well-being of other people, what happened was, is there was this different section of the brain that activated, and they call that the subgenual cortex, or the septal region. And this region is completely associated with social attachment and bonding. Now, what we have here is when people really do put their other people's lives ahead of their own, like Dallin was talking about in the primitive sense, we really are trying to do it because we're social creatures, we're bonding with the others, and that provides a benefit to the group. It's also biologically hardwired into the brain, and as shown, pleasurable. When I was saying that there's different versions of altruism, the two biggies, and I'll keep them short, is indirect reciprocity,
yep.
Which has to deal with your reputation. Basically, if you are known for doing good deeds and being kind to others, it builds a positive reputation about you. And that means that some point in the future, if you yourself end up getting into trouble, more people, or the pride, in this, in Dallin's case maybe, are more likely to help you because you've been doing good for them. More likely, so he's going to do good for you. Pay it forward, bitches. Sorry, wait, did that sneak out? I'm sorry. the other kind of the big one is direct reciprocity.
Twice. This is also, good. That's good.
This is also known as tit for tat. Basically, I'm going to be nice to you because I realize that at some point in the future, we're going to interact again. And the more likely you are to interact with another person, and the more likely you are to feel that it's possible that they could help you if you ever need help in the future, then the more likely you are to help them in the beginning. Now, all these things give a signal of available resources. This is primal again, and it's good for partnership. So we've already figured out, just by scanning the human brain and doing lots of studies through science, for science, that this is primal. This goes back to our animal instinct, and it's been shown in other animals, like Dallin said. It is good for the social group as a social being. It is good for reproductive purposes. Oh, yeah. Come on, you frat boys. Start being reciprocating. And I think their girlfriend friends have been saying that for years. And honestly, it's good for your own health. So anything, natural selection has proven, anything that is good for your own health, you're going to tend to keep that trait. So altruism is actually something that's hardwired into our brains. It's a genetic trait, and we carry it with us to even this day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Witchy, Where do you want to go with this?
To expand on that, actually, and I actually went looking this up, the name of the author. This was something I actually studied pretty extensively in my classes a couple of years ago when I was doing my basic undergrad, or at least the first parts of my undergrad. And specifically, I'm going to go, I go back to this example a lot on this show, but I'm going to go back to ancient Greece on this one. Specifically the Homeric period, because, and I mean that in the sense that this is the time period in which the playwright or the epic writer Homer lived. According to one Alistair MacIntyre, and yes, you guys can look him up if you want to out there in Vlogscast land, the society of Homeric Greece was such that you did for others because that's the way society was actually structured. It's a little difficult for us to understand now that we are a society of individuals, but at one time, that's the way society ran, was that you did for others, and your identity was determined by what you did for the group, by what you contributed. So, I mean, I can't really say that, you know, doing for others isn't real, because one of the arguably greatest societies that rose up out of ancient time periods literally functioned in a time before there was even such thing as writing as a concept, literally functioned in this way where you do for others, others do for you, and that is your entire life, that is your entire identity, that is how you function. You know, anyone who didn't function that way in a society was, to again to quote Alistair MacIntyre, engaged in the enterprise of trying to make himself disappear. If you didn't do your role, there was no place for you in that society. You essentially didn't have a place. And honestly, you can't say that this isn't a real thing of, you know, altruism and giving to others and doing for others, when without this type of, you know, altruism that, you know, Tech and Dallin have expanded on, we could arguably say that we wouldn't be here, because so much of our society is built off of ancient Greece and you know, subsequently ancient Roman society.
All hail the aqueduct.
Amongst other things. I was thinking more democracy, but...
Actually, to expand on this, it's very interesting. I was at a meeting with a whole bunch of skeptics earlier this week. A little thing up here we call skeptics in the pub.
Now who's the name dropper?
Oh, actually, and if any of the guys who were sharing a beer with me that night are listening, hi. Well, one guy in particular that I had an incredible conversation with, he actually dropped the name of a book that I still haven't picked up yet. Hey, it's only been a few days, and, well, money was a little tight. It's called The Mating Mind, from Jeffrey Miller, who was a psychologist. Okay, sounds like somebody might know what this is. But I think it would actually help sort of... It dovetails into what we're talking about tonight. Tying in things like human morals, creativity, language, all of that stuff, and just takes a stab at where it actually all came from. And yeah, it actually goes right down to like a very, very primal urge, shall we say. I haven't read it yet. I do want to read it. I've got three or four other books I'm working on as well. So I will pick this one up, though, because what the guy was telling me about and how he described it, it is going to make me ponder a little bit, I think. And well, maybe, again, help explain. I wish I'd read it before the show.
Don't forget,
I would have had an answer that didn't sound like I was talking out of my hind end.
Don't forget, there is a tribe of human beings who have never, ever been exposed to religion in any form.
Mm-hmm.
And they are completely altruistic. Their little society group is made up that if it's not good for the whole of them, then it's not good, and it's not done or cultivated or whatever, because their survival depends on every single member working in harmony with their society.
You, and, sir?
And
sound
their,
like a communist.
And their environment around them. No, I sound like a socialist, or both, actually. A social communist.
trust
but
me.
The point is that we have actual living proof.
Yeah.
That you don't have to have religion to be selfless. That you don't, if you need, like I said to one of my buddies, if you need religion to not go out, to prevent you from going out to raping, pillaging, and murdering, you're a bad person.
And you should feel bad.
Yep. Now, there's a couple pieces about this that I'm gonna hit really quickly. Item number one, something that you were talking about, Tech, made me suddenly think about Don Corleone, and if you have not yet seen The Godfather, the first half hour or so is actually rather riveting. One of the things that happens is, at the very beginning, it's Don Corleone's daughter's wedding. And according to the tradition of this, and I've never heard of this one before, and I'm from an Italian family, if someone comes to the father of the bride on the day of her wedding asking for a favor, he's obligated to do it, according to the story. Now, like I said, I've never heard of this one before, but then again, I was also brought up with all brothers, so the hell do I know? Anyway, the point of it was, he said at one point, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit because I wasn't able to find the exact quote, "You come asking to me for a favor, and I will do this favor for you, but someday, and that day may never come, but someday I may need to come to you for a favor." Now, unfortunately, later in the movie, spoiler, he has to call in that favor. And it's because his son, Santino, ended up, what's the word that I'm looking for? To become a very holy man on the side of the New Jersey Turnpike.
And by holy, you mean greatly resembling stereotypical Swiss cheese.
I would say that would be about right, yes. Now, as far as to, yes, Tech.
No, never mind, don't worry.
Okay. Now, as far as to the altruism part, and that's about as far as we're going to be taking this one out, and I'll explain why in a second. I found this listing. I had heard about several of these over the course of the last few years, but this one I had remembered from fairly recently, like the last couple of months, and I tracked it down from, believe it or not, of all things, the WinnipegFreePress.com, simply because that was the first one that came up for me when I went looking for it, the most recent of which.
Interesting.
The title on this one is Rats Display Empathy, Altruism. Now, short version of this is they were trying to find out if a rat of similar types raised with similar groupings, shall we say, for a second, if they would help another rat that they recognized as a rat. So albino rats were raised amongst themselves, rats with black and white markings amongst themselves, and put into situations where one rat was free, another one was in, how is it described over here?
Back of the bus?
Quote, "The experimenters then," quote, "trapped one rat inside an uncomfortable coffin-like restrainer," as one newspaper article described it. The idea was to find out if you had one rat free, another one in a small container-like area, and the opportunity for the free one to either get the other one released and then go after the chocolate treat, or go get the chocolate treat and then free the other guy, more often than not, they would go and they would free the other rat first and then share the chocolate between them. Which, yep. I mean, let's face it, we would normally think of the concept of altruism as a higher species, and I'm using this term probably incorrectly, but a higher species, primates, most exclusively, almost, that where altruism would be something that would be a societal thing like we would have. And in this case, it's shown to be inherent to laboratory animals, bred for exactly the purpose of being in laboratory experiments, and they have it inside of themselves from pure genetics. So it's not necessarily a societal thing. It's apparently, in a lot of cases, it would appear to be very just inbred in many, many biological lines, just as something just deeply inset.
That expands upon the that expands upon the MRI experiments showing that in the primal sections of the brain, the reactions.
Exactly so. There's a lot of those things, and it's really amazing. Now there's a couple of pieces about this also of what was asked that I wanted to also hit because I never saw the movie. So if I'm using the term incorrectly, somebody please forgive me and explain it to me because I don't exactly completely understand the meme. We need to go a little bit deeper onto this question. So, where was it over here? Okay, speaking about altruism, where was it? As far as to it not being evolutionary, I don't believe that altruism is not evolutionary by what we've just gone through with over here. If it's something that ends up assisting a society, and I'm using the term very loosely, meaning a collection of similar organisms, that altruism does play out because it assists the greater good for the whole, which kind of comes back to what you were talking about earlier, Tech, about the humans who hadn't been touched. If I remember right, wasn't it somewhere in like the Amazon or something like that?
Exactly. It was. You can't even reach them by vehicle unless you're airdropped in, and even then the trees are so big, it's just you're better off trekking through the forest for days and days and days to find them.
Yeah, and I've heard about some similar things like that. Where I wanted to go about all this was, see, the thing of this, there's, as usual, Ross throws us stuff that really layers out a lot of stuff, and it's kind of difficult at times to untangle all of this. I've been thinking about it a lot, trying to go into where I wanted to go with this, and it's damn tough. So,
actually, hold on
thank
a second,
you.
Susan.
Sure.
I think I have a short answer for Ross about that expanded question. If you want to go ahead and read that, I'll shoot out a short answer, and then we'll move on to the question of reality.
The one in the Q&A right now?
Yeah.
Okay. In that case, let me go ahead and do that right now. The question, as put up over here, that Ross, again, you know, you're killing me, man. You're really killing me. Anyway, goes on to say, now, go from Greece to ancient Rome, the zenith of civilizations then. And again, please forgive me again if my emphasis in areas is incorrect, because I try not to, and I've said this before, I really do try hard not to emphasize in a way that might be screwing with the way that the intention is. So, again, please forgive me. Now, go from Greece to ancient Rome, the zenith of civilization then, infanticide, gladiator fights, I can English, I promise, to the death, high slavery, women were worth nothing, pitting African animals and lions against humans, then killing the animals. Were they altruistic? All right.
I'm going to follow up on Tech as well, actually. On
okay.
The short version. The short version is the ability to be altruistic is inherent in most living organisms. Are they available in all of them? We don't know for sure. We haven't examined them all for that. But we know that there's a lot of them that are humans and animals alike. Now, the short version of all the killing and slavery and whatnot, hey, guess what? That's in the Catholic Bible. That's in the Torah. That's in the Quran. That's in all that shit. And it's in religion. So whether or not it was religious or not that was causing them to do it, when you have a bad person or a person who has a not perfect mind, that there's something wrong upstairs, and then they obtain a powerful position, bad stuff's going to happen.
Hello, okay? Caligula.
Bad stuff's going to happen. Humans are not perfect, just like animals are not perfect. The only difference is we have opposable thumbs, and we built the first tools that we know of, anyway, advanced tools. And so because of that, we're higher up on the food chain, and we think very highly of ourselves. We are fallible. We make mistakes. And a lot of times we do things that have no reason for us doing it because there is something wrong upstairs. That's the short answer.
Now this becomes interesting. I definitely want to tag stuff onto this also myself, but Witchy, you got the floor. Go for it.
Just to point out, I wasn't exactly insinuating that ancient Greece in the Homeric time period was a utopia, because it definitely wasn't. This is a time period that, legend has it, has had such things as the, you know, Trojan War, and the fun effects of that, and, you know, that type of thing. That said, you're kind of comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing a grouping of city-states that had a common cultural identity to a large, sprawling empire that basically mowed down any indigenous people if it found, and used it to and used those various conquests to keep the bread and circuses. But the Panem et Circenses going in Rome proper. So Rome had a completely different mindset and culture from ancient Greece. And of course, Rome being a Rome, it assimilated pretty much, you know, everything it could and kind of glommed it all into the whole, not making a Borg joke, though I definitely want to. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of what we know about Rome isn't exactly on the up and up. We tend to, this is the case with any civilization, with any civilization different from ours or looking back, we tend to sensationalize the awful and the extreme cases. You know, again, it's like pointing at the Westboro Baptist Church and going, this is what Christians are, because they're sensational. This is what people, you know, tend to latch on to. And, you know, was the Roman Empire altruistic? Of course not. But were there altruistic people in Rome? I would say, yeah, there would have had to have been, because a society that looks out only for its own interests, a society made up of individuals that are not, where there is not one altruistic soul, is going to collapse pretty quickly.
There were plenty of gladiators who were willing to fall on their enemy's sword to save the lives of their fellow gladiators. Okay? Yeah. It really are.
And keep in mind, gladiators weren't all slaves. Quite a few of them chose, it was an honor of the thing, quite a few of them chose to do that, women included. And they were given high positions of honor for that, because being a gladiator was no joke.
Gladiators were basically the football players of their time. Look at how we raise up football players. We give them millions of dollars in money. We go and we celebrate their achievements, and borderline, you know, godhood, some of these players, you know. Some of these players get so much time on the air, so much acknowledgement throughout all of the U.S., It's incredible. And I think to myself, why can't we do this for teachers?
Oh, God, now I need to write a thesis on the culture of worship in football. God damn it.
Yeah, and you know what? It gets even worse. They get the NFL, the American football players, as opposed to the football players, they go out there, they get millions upon millions of dollars, so much wealth, they're wearing padding, they've got people behind them trying to help them, to coach them, to get better, to be stronger, faster, because we have the technology, and yet the guys who are out there playing a much more vicious version known as rugby don't get nearly as much.
Or Australian rules football.
Oh, God, Jesus, you want to talk... By the way, you want to... If you... Okay, kids... Turn down the volume for a couple of seconds, okay?
Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get yourself a big old nasty nipple hard on, watch any of the hawkers from the football games from Australia and New Zealand watch these guys. And oh my God, they're glorious.
There are some amazing, amazing, like, feats of acrobatics and athleticism in Australian rules before me.
If you want another example of gladiators of their time for entertainment, look at soccer all over the world. I mean,
it's
real soccer.
It's up here.
Except for Americans because, we're bass backwards, but...
Well, no, wait a second. Let's make sure we're talking about it right. We're talking American soccer, meaning international football?
Yes. Yeah, international football, what Americans call soccer. It is, there are, the fandoms are so high that when certain teams play against each other, the fans literally shoot one another.
Yeah, people tend to die.
I am not kidding. This is nuts. At least when gladiators fight.
People seriously tend to die.
Yeah, at least when the gladiators fought, the people in the ring died, not the spectators. So tell me, how far have we come? Not that far.
Well, that depends on whether or not you're going out to a mosh pit and watching people rapping and MCs having their people shooting each other in the... we'll come back to that later.
Yeah. And these are the same people who go to church or synagogue
now,
or temple.
One thing, though, like when we're talking about ancient Greece, ancient Rome, just about anything where the history or any of the written history is... a mere fraction of what happened. Like, envision now, say, 1,000 years from now. An archaeologist comes to what's left of America. Okay,
anywhere in the world that has internet access.
Well, let's not get into the whole, America will stand forever because, well... Then
all societies, all civilizations die.
Yeah, and that's plus my population.
Fireflies showed us that, so it's going to be us and China. So going on.
My point: the generations from now will only know us by what's been recorded. Now, to our benefit, because of things like digital technology, the internet, mass media, and all that kind of stuff, they're going to have. Hopefully, a wealth more information than what we have of empires and societies that were dated thousands of years ago. So now, what Ross is talking about here, about infanticide, gladiator fights to the death, high slavery, women were worth nothing, pitting African animals and lions against humans.
Which actually pretty much never happened.
Well, but my point is...
We have the running of the bulls.
Well,
there's still bullfighting.
Yes, but my point... is that we are only seeing the highlights or the things that the people back then deemed worthy of record. Mm-hmm. So who's to say that the shopkeeper down the street from the Senate building wasn't the most altruistic son of a bitch in known history? But because nothing was ever written about him, we don't know. And unfortunately, I think a lot of that we may never know because... I don't think there would be a way to get the evidence other than to state that we said before. A lot of the good things that we attribute to possibly religion, or as you called it, Shujin, very nebulous concepts, we see it today, and we're able to look at it today from a biological perspective based on the evidence we can collect, and from that derive the model. The scientific model, which then we can use to go back and say, again, I completely derailed here. Sorry.
Before I let him get through, this is not the easiest thing in the world. Trying to piece a lot of these thoughts together that take a lot of concepts and try to put them together in a very short amount of time. That's part of the reason why the show, as much as I want to keep it to an hour, ends up being about 90 minutes. We are just average Joe Schmucks on the streets, really. We're no Matt Delahunty's, we're no Daniel Dennett's, we're no Hitchens, for Christ's sake. Not by a long shot. We're just average Joes trying to put this stuff together on the fly.
Yeah.
So if you're screaming at the TV right now, or whatever passes for TV in 3025, forgive us. You know, we're just doing the best we can through this one.
And Dallin's completely correct. There are a lot of things that are glossed over. Ancient Rome is a perfect example. When you talk about high slavery, what's glossed over about the Roman culture is that you could, if you were a slave, you could actually buy your way out of being a slave.
Mm-hmm.
You could also serve with the other, their military, and earn your way out of slavery.
You could also
marry out of slavery.
And also want to point out that Roman slaves were so highly, basically, actually prized in most cases that there was a specific day for the masters to take care of the slaves and show them their appreciation.
Could flip it around.
Absolutely.
Right now.
And in that Bible, the Bible's versions of slaves.
No,
Rome looks like roses compared to the Bible's versions of slaves.
Yep, and down. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if we've completely derailed you at this point, but
no, I mean, all I'm saying is that we can only glimpse at a tiny fraction of what Roman society was truly like, based on what we found in history, historical records, what we found in their written history, how things were chronicled. And as a result, we only see what they wanted us to see, really.
And is it not written in the Book of Chronicles that all this shit wasn't really there in the first
place? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I truly am sorry. I have to thank Thomas in the Bible, because I don't know how many times I heard him say, was it not written in the Book of the... Oh, God. Why the hell... Is it written in the Book of Chronicles that it's written in the Book of Chronicles? What the hell is all this...
Anyway,
I'm on this show. Why again?
You know, that's the second time you've asked that, Dallin. At this point, I'm going to have to create a reason for you.
So if you've got a reason list that you would like to throw at us, feel free, shujintribble@gmail.com, and feel free to tweet it to me also, shujintribble@shujintribble.
So shall we move on to reality?
Well, yes, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put the end cap on the whole question at this point. Greece, ancient Rome, the United States of America, which is a description, not a country name, Canada, Europe, the EU, Mexico, NATO, the Soviet bloc, Australia, New Zealand, Australia, Eurasia. It doesn't matter what names you want to call these organized areas by. All of them, in some way, are altruistic. Because for the greater good of the society, people are willing to say, I will defend the people behind me from people in front of me. Depending as to how nebulous you want to get with the concept of what qualifies as altruism, having a standing guard, I won't say army, having a standing guard could qualify very easily as altruism. And again, it's a highly nebulous concept, because there's so many different levels that you could go along with it. There's so many different ways that you could describe it and various different techniques that you could describe to it. It could be technological. It could be societal. It could be military. It could be monetary. But when all is said and done, if you're trying to make sure that somebody else is safe one way or another, provided for one way or another, that's altruism. And again, any society can have its bad parts. And we will never know every last thing about every single person, every nuance to every society, because it is simply impossible to have all of this stuff written down. Simply impossible. But they succeeded for a while at least. And by that angle, there has to be some. You don't necessarily need to throw yourself on a grenade in order to be considered altruistic for societal's use. So, yeah, now comes the far more difficult question.
As if this one wasn't hard enough.
Well, I don't know that this one is really going to be as difficult as what I originally thought it was going to be, because I really wavered a lot on this one as to one of the biggest questions: what is reality? Is it possible for there to be something that is unreal? Now, that in and of itself may not necessarily be a valid question to be asking. As I recall, I forget what the exact quote was, but from one of the Star Trek movies, one of the questions that was posed to Spock after he was reincarnated, regenerated, whatever, and he was, one of the philosophical ideals was, nothing unreal exists. And it's a statement that's really difficult to catch and latch onto at first, because it goes by as such an offhanded kind of thing, as Spock's there at the terminal and he's getting all this learning back into his head. But philosophically speaking, it makes absolutely perfect sense. Because if the idea is that reality is here, something that is unreal cannot exist in reality. I mean, that's God, it's going to be one of those things. if we ascribe reality to certain conditions, something that does not match those conditions cannot be in reality, ergo cannot be here. Doesn't necessarily mean that it cannot be. It means that here, what we understand, and by that I mean the universe as we take it, it can't be here under conditions that do not adhere to reality, the universe, our universe as we know it. Now, this one gets to be real fun, because here's my question that I'm going to pose to you guys. And Witchy, you're going to have fun with this one, because I'm coming up this side of the list instead of down the other way. This is not going to sound like it makes sense. We have discovered that the universe is expanding. The universe is not only continuing to expand, but the expansion is accelerating at a speed of which there is the possibility of heat death for the universe, the Big Rip, as it's been described in some cases, if things do not slow down and, you know, come to a stasis. Here's the big question. What is it expanding into, if it is expanding?
The Jeopardy theme in 3, 2, 1.
See, I seem to recall at some point on the Friday night show that we do, a question being asked along the lines of, if you could do any one thing or be any one place, where would you be? And my answer was, I want to be at that point where the universe, at the very edge of where the universe, just to see where it's expanding into, what's beyond it, and what's going on. At which point you guys basically declared that I want to be everywhere at once.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with being Q. Let's leave it there.
I mean, I suppose that depends on which theories you subscribe to as far as the nature of the universe. Jeez, this is, I don't want to go on too much longer, because I could probably talk about this all night, and there are other people here who need to talk, so I'm going to cut myself off there.
There you go, Tech.
I'm going to take the scientist approach to this. First off, I am not an astrophysicist. I am not a quantum theorist. My level of science is not post-grad or anything like that. I did get an A in chemistry, but, you know, hey. So, my truthful answer is, what is it to the question of what is the universe expanding into? I don't know. But it does not scare me. That's the difference. I am not afraid of what it's expanding into. I am not afraid of whether or not it's going to slow down, keep going, or pop like a bubble. Okay? Mm-hmm. That doesn't scare me in the least. Because the universe exists, it's existed for billions of years. I seriously doubt it's going to disintegrate or disappear in the next fraction of a second. And if it does, it does. I can't stop it. What I can focus on is right now, I'm online, I'm talking to people I enjoy having a conversation with over topics that, in some cases, I enjoy talking about, in other cases, they fucking bother me to hell. But, no, I don't know, and really it doesn't bother me. If we get a chance to study it and figure it out, hooray for humanity, that's just one more notch in the belt for science. And if we never figure it out, I don't think it's really going to hurt us all that much.
Dal?
Oh, boy. I am far too sober to answer this question, at least. Reasonably entertaining, so...
I got some 151.
Oh, yeah, unfortunately, you're over there, I'm over here, so...
I'll mail it to you.
I'll have to share Tech's take on this, in that I don't know what we're expanding into. And for that matter, my last name is not Krauss. I'm pretty sure he doesn't know what it's expanding into, but he would probably be the first person to at least put together one hell of a theory behind it. Just given everything that he's contributed to the Higgs boson, the something from nothing concept, all of that, which is awesome. I personally don't know what we're expanding into. I'd love to find out, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm curious.
And I think this becomes a case of the destination not being as important as the journey, which, of course, it always is. But in our quest to find that edge, like to find that boundary or to find out what it is we're expanding into, imagine the discoveries we make along the way, the cosmic phenomena that we would uncover and bring into our own reality.
Now, what's really cool is there was actually a science fiction show. I think it was Star Trek. I could be wrong on this. Mm-hmm. One of the versions of it. They did an episode where the ship wound up in a section of space that was actually outside of normal space-time. And what was found was that thoughts could become reality there because it was an unformed space. And I thought that was actually a really cool concept.
It was The Next Generation. I remember that episode, actually.
Okay. Was that the one with Barclay hooked into the Enterprise?
No, this was...
No, that was Barclay being augmented somehow by...
Nope. This was one where a guy came on board. He was apparently had this new
warp
technology thing. Yeah, the Traveler, yeah.
The Traveler.
Oh, this was a Traveler episode?
Yeah, yes. The first one.
Okay, I was actually thinking of the one where... it was a reality that Beverly Crusher had manipulated accidentally in a warp bubble, and people disappeared left and right.
Yeah, there was one
with the Traveler, and it was Wesley Crusher who
actually created that was the second Traveler episode, though.
Yeah.
Okay. The piece about this question that I still, however, find eminently fascinating. You guys remember? Was it last week? Week before? Where the scientist who had spent the last 30 years working on something about inflation had his information finally brought to his attention and confirmed.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. If you have not yet seen that particular video, I will make sure that I link it in the description for this video over on YouTube, so you can take a look at that if I haven't done it once already. I've probably got it in my favorites at this point. But there is a possibility because of that discovery that... I say the word discovery now, and all I can see is his wife with her eyes wide. Discovery! and big hug. And you, when you see the video, you'll understand if you haven't already seen
it. Picard with his eyes wide open.
I was just thinking that. Damn it.
Hey, Wishy, great minds stink alike, don't they?
I had to have a conversation with you later about the nature of geek conversation turning into the Temerian language.
Oh, boy.
Let's see how this works. Anyway, the point being is that there are some cosmological scientists who think that this discovery may actually hint towards, may be pointing towards, the concept that our universe, as we know it, is simply a bubble in a froth of a multiverse, where our expansion, our frontier, is actually pushing up against the froth of... I'm going to use the term, I do not know if this is the right one, but it's the only one that's suddenly just coming to mind, could be pushing up against the quantum foam of the who only knows how many dimensional space-time thing, planar brain soup, or whatever it is that we are formed out of.
Hey, Sujin, dumb it down. We're a bubble in a carbonated beverage.
I'll go with that, because the idea that I certainly had was really disgusting.
We are components of a glass of beer. Awesome. Yes, of course the Canadian's going to say that.
You know, considering that somebody recently had artificial chromosomes inserted into DNA of yeast, which then reproduced on its own.
like actual, like, non-synthetically produced yeast. I remember hearing about that.
Yep. So, considering that that's one of the beer components, which, by the way, in German is pronounced beer, really, really cool stuff.
But, any country is pronounced beer.
Well, see, I'm making reference to an HBO special that Joe Piscopo had done long time ago. I can explain about that one later. Hmm. For those of you that remember what HBO used to be.
Yeah. Anyway, beer. The universal word.
Pretty much.
But, you know, Go ahead.
Our first contact with extraterrestrial life, I propose that the first word they will recognize is the word beer. And there will be intergalactic peace.
Up until the point where we take them to the first football game, in which case, no, not so much.
Well, actually, my first thought was, so long as the beer we hand them isn't Budweiser, we should be fine.
No.
Otherwise, we are in trouble.
Guys, I'm sorry, but it's too late. It is absolutely too late for the human race and the interactions of alien races to make a good impression anymore. Not since they put Honey Boo Boo on the air. We're screwed. Ooh,
That's painful.
And let's put the CPL Blue Dot first.
See, we could have gotten away with Jersey Shore just by saying, well, you know, we had some people who were brain dead, and they were in charge, but we took care of things. But then we stuck Honey Boo Boo on the air, and it was like, no, I'm sorry, we have no explanation for that.
Honey Boo Boo, too, but then there was Duck Dynasty.
I don't really care about Duck Dynasty. They make Honey Boo Boo. Honey Boo Boo makes Duck Dynasty look normal and average. Okay? That's how bad Honey Boo Boo is.
Let's see.
She's a child. Duck Dynasty's a bunch of overgrown guys who like to go out and shoot things.
Okay? Yes, who are playing up for the camera. So is Jersey Shore, but we digress. Yeah. This is starting to get a lot like... For those of you that listen to the podcast of Skeptics with a K, that's kind of what this ends up being every once in a little while. A little bit of a sidetrack. Okay, and then just like the rubber band, snap back into place. Here we go. So here's the problem. The question of reality versus unrealness... Because I have a hard time with the concept of the word unreality, just because there is a great argument that I'd heard. Do you believe in a God? Yes. Okay. You said that God is the one who can do miracles. Is that right? Yes. Okay. Well, you can't measure my God. Well, no, wait a second. You said that your God can affect things in reality. Yes, we can. Mm-hmm. So now the question is, and this is sort of gleaned from that original email, can we measure something that is unreal if you go under those conditions? Dallin, I'm going to guess what your answer is going to be now that I've put it that way, but I'm going to go ahead and go down the line.
Can you measure something that's unreal using concepts of reality? Is pretty much what you're asking?
Well, think of it this way. Like I said, can your God be measured? No. Does your God do miracles? Yes. Miracles happen in the real world, right? Yes. Okay. So we can measure your God because we can measure the effect of those miracles in reality. Ergo, can you use miracles that are done in reality, having real concepts, real consequences, to measure something that is unreal, i.e. a God?
If you can measure the miracle, that means that there is evidence in reality that this happened. Like any good scientist, you would try to replicate said miracle in a experimental environment. I am going to wager and say, for the most part, you can replicate those circumstances. It may take a few years, but at that point, once you have proven that it is repeatable using models in reality, you've effectively debunked the miracle and therefore have debunked that there is, that some God has somehow manipulated reality from a state of unreality, because what you have witnessed as a so-called miracle is actually based in reality. And I think something's leaking out of my left ear right now by having said all that.
I completely understand. Believe me, just thinking of the concept was hard enough on me.
Yeah, but all I can say is that I would say the majority of the miracles we see and hear about these days have all had some kind of answer based in the real world. And some of them have been pretty disgusting. Tree that has the holy water.
Which turned out to be aphid shit.
Yeah, there's the...
if it's good enough for ants, it's good enough for God.
Well, hey. But then there's the... what was it? There was a statue of the Virgin Mary that was tearing up. And it turns out the reason it was tearing up is because there was a busted sewer line not too far away that was causing it. And I believe the owner of that church got a little incensed when his so-called miracle was debunked that way.
Yep, and the guy that was brought in, that was asked to come in to look it over and verify it as being a miracle, was brought up on state charges of insulting religion causing distress for religion, whatever the hell the trumped up charge was. I'm going to look it up.
But again, to my point, I would say the majority, excuse me, sorry, fighting a cold here. I would say the majority of the miracles out there are provable, repeatable by real experimentation, et cetera, et cetera. So, can you measure the unreal using the real? All I can say is that, let me blow your mind with this. Once you measure the unreal, it becomes real. So therefore, there is no unreality. Because once you've tested it, and once you've brought it into reality, it is reality.
That's great. I hadn't thought about that one. Bun, I'm coming over to you now.
Like I said, I am far too sober to answer this question.
Well, let me ask you a question. How are you defining reality? Because reality has been getting redefined and redefined as our knowledge of what is real grows. For example, once upon a time, when a person's heart stopped beating and they stopped breathing, they were dead. That was real. Then we began understanding how the human body worked in more sophistication, Well, their heart has stopped, they've stopped breathing, but their brain is still going. We can bring them back. All of a sudden, they are no longer dead. That is real. A person's thoughts for a very long time were not real. They were not physical. You couldn't hold them. They didn't affect reality outside of that person. But their thoughts are manifest in electrical impulses that can be measured in the brain. That is real. Those person's thoughts affect reality now. Their thoughts become real. How do you define what is real and what isn't? The more we understand about our world and our universe around us, the more things that weren't real become real. Shijin, I can pick up a radio and talk to you on the correct frequency. The radio waves themselves are not real. Their effect on the human body, their effect on equipment that we can hold is real. So again, how do you define reality, Shijin?
You know, I'm not used to having people just go ahead and take my questions and throwing them around over back into my face again. So, you know what? I'm passing you.
Mine's a combination of both answers. My reality is what my brain tells me it is. If I look at the sky and everybody else sees a blue sky, my brain can actually tell me that it is pink. And it will be pink. It may be pink only for me, but how do you know? How are other people going to convince me it's blue when my brain is telling me it is pink, and it will always and then it keeps telling me that it is pink every time I look. My reality is different, and my reality is subjective. And I think that's actually in the teachings of Buddha. You know that we basically live in our own little bubble of reality, that we see the world the way our brain tells it it is.
And Plato.
Plato too. Okay, yeah, there's been plenty of philosophers on this. Reality can be a philosophy. It can be a scientific measurement. It can be a combination of both, or it can be neither. It can belong to other fields of science. When you talk about non-reality, to me, something that I have not heard of, something that I have not seen, something I have not read about, something I have not learned about, something that has not communicated to me by another person in my mental reality does not yet exist, even if it truly exists somewhere else in the world and somebody else has seen it. It has not been communicated to me. Therefore, my reality, my personal understanding, has not been expanded to encompass that yet. Now, we have mathematically shown that we understand the reality, mathematically speaking, of the universe. Where does that break down? Well, it breaks down with black holes, because at the speed of light, reality breaks down. So, for my current understanding of reality and the cosmos is the only place that I can think of that is unreal. But we have proven in some way, shape, or form exists mathematically is the center of a black hole. So what happens if we figure out a way to actually go into the black hole, measure the inside of the black hole, and come back out again? Do those measurements change from one stage to another? Does the equipment that's doing the measurement change when it's in there versus when it's out? We won't know until we actually try and find out.
Are you proposing Schrodinger's black hole?
No. I'm saying we don't know, and I'm not suggesting that since we don't know, it's both yes and no. I'm saying the answer is we don't know, period. And therefore, since we can't prove one way or the other, that does not make both true. That also does not make either one false. It is a state of suspension, and we won't know until we get to that point. Like I said, my reality does not encompass that which has not been communicated to me, either through sight, sound, touch, taste, or smell. So until it's sent, until my brain encompasses it. To me, it's unreal.
Well, this gets to be really interesting because I, amongst other things, I was just suddenly wondering, what does a black hole smell like? And as odd as that might sound, there is a certain amount of reality to that.
Potatoes.
I was going to say old socks, but...
Which would explain where they all went to. By the way, I did find the listing over on slate.com, the gentleman that we were talking about earlier.
Hey, Ross, what do you mean by just law? Are you talking about justified law, or are you talking about justice?
Yeah, well, good question, and we will get to that in a second. This is the gentleman right here. Sanal, oh God, Edamaruku, I believe is how it's pronounced. He was brought in specifically to try to figure out if the weeping statue was actually weeping. He was asked to come in. And then what ended up happening was, here you go, you now face possible arrest. Why? And here's the quote on this one. Leaders of two Catholic lady organizations have launched charges against me under Section 295 Alpha of the Indian Penal Code. Yes, I said Alpha. Give me a break. This charges a person with, quote, now get this, deliberately hurting religious feelings and attempting malicious acts intended to outrage the religious sentiments of any class or community, unquote. It is absurd to claim that I did anything of the sort, mainly because he was intentionally brought in. He was asked to come in to look over this thing and find out if it actually was a miracle, witchy.
So, basically, they're trying to bring him in on charges that he went in and purposefully debunked it with the intent to hurt feelings?
Apparently, that's where they're going on this
because
one.
Because you can legislate intent?
Wait a second. Before you get too far into that
okay,
one...
Okay, you know what? I'm taking that one back, but that's still a really, really ridiculous, you know...
Yeah, and I want to read this one back through again because this is going to end up being a topic sometime in the future because this kind of ties into what Ross is asking about. The charge again was, quote, deliberately hurting religious feelings and attempting malicious acts intended to outrage the religious sentiments of any class or community. Here's where it gets funny. Does that also mean that if you make a pulled pork sandwich for yourself in a Muslim country, would that qualify? Now, admittedly, this is in India, so it's not the same thing. But opening a White Castle hamburger joint in India, would that qualify under that piece?
Well, I mean, come on, opening a White Castle anywhere is a crime against humanity, isn't it?
Oh.
Hey, we don't have any north of the border, so give me a break.
Shot across the bow.
Dude, White Castle is so good.
I'll bring some frozen, and we'll see if we can find a microwave for you. How's that?
I don't have to worry about that. We have a telecommuter who, whenever she comes to visit, which is about once a month, she gets the big boxes of them and brings them in. She flies them in, so the airplane smells like White Castle.
Nice.
Her rental car smells like White Castle.
That is beautiful.
I'm pretty sure when I'm up there in Pittsburgh in a couple of months, where I'm staying, there should be microwaves.
Yeah,
or if not, I will at the very least have access to a few. So
just remember, if you're going to eat the microwavable ones, wrap them in a damp paper towel. That way the bun doesn't come out hard.
No. If you do it the way they say and just put a little slit up in the top of it and microwave them like that, they work out just fine. Now, let's finish this guy off.
Yes.
The idea of measuring something unreal via something that is real. Can it be done? Yes and no. My thoughts on it is, can you measure the effect of something? Absolutely. Can you, for certain, come to a proved conclusion, and I'm being very cagey about this one, yes, I know, because, of course, as we know full well, or you know now, the only way to prove something is through math. You can only prove mathematical.
Being that, universe, so, you know, you're in good shape there.
Right. However, going on that angle, can you for certain prove, and again, being cagey about it, that a visible, measurable effect in reality is caused from something unreal? I don't know that any scientist worth their salt of any stripe would be able to say, yes, you can do that because you will have eliminated every other real possibility. I don't think that any scientist would go that way because a scientist would not say, well, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this. It's got to be that. Because that is, congratulations, you've now crossed over into argument from ignorance. As much of a pain in the ass as it is. Hmm. Argument from ignorance is exactly what it sounds like, and the term ignorance is being used not as a pejorative, but as a descriptor. Ignorance is not knowing something, and that is something that can be cured. So if somebody says you're ignorant about something, after you get done slapping them across the face for their tone of voice, you can go ahead and say, fine, give me a book to read about that. So the problem is, can you...
Don't ask for a book. Ask for many books from many different authors and many different sources.
Well, yeah, absolutely. True that.
Kind of like the Bible. Many different authors, many different sources.
And if you really want to go that way, ask for the Book of Jaquan and watch their eyebrows go up. So check out the reference. You're welcome. Anyway, but the point of it is, if you're trying to measure something that is unreal via tools that are real, you are now dealing with a Venn diagram where there are two circles that do not intersect, theoretically. Hmm. Now, the problem of it is, if you're dealing with something that is unreal, you have no way of measuring where the reality and unreality overlap, if they even do. Ergo, there's no way of knowing whether or not you can actually measure something. So I guess the big question then becomes, does that then qualify as agnosticism towards anything that is unreal? And I guess in this particular case, I'm going to fall under the category of, yes, agnosticism is the right way to think of it. And remember, agnosticism means, can you actually learn about something before you start thinking, you know what, that's something else that we should really do. We should really have a show sometime where we describe these terms and actually make sure that they're all clarified properly. Like Gnosticism, agnosticism, atheism, antitheism, theism,
well,
deism.
Well, you know, if we only had this vast repository of human knowledge that we could search at our fingertips, you know, maybe even our mobile fingertips, you know, that would be absolutely amazing. But, of course, that would require effort, and, you know, we're Americans.
Dallin, you've heard of the Library of Babylon, right? You've heard of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You heard about the fire sale that they were having, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
okay. I just figured, why?
Really?
Some people get the joke. Some people need to have it explained.
Well, yeah, and I mean, don't forget the slight rain and flood damage sale they had at the Library of Alexandria.
That's
a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. And if you head over to the Tower of Babel Studios, I'm sure that they'll have it for you in pretty much any localized language. Like,
I hate you all.
Yeah.
And just remember, folks, always have a little, take a little grain of salt with your knowledge.
Yeah, and as for the whole, what about this repository? We are still working on the whole bitch slap over IP protocol.
And I think we just found one of our test subjects.
And if you really want to go ahead and have one, head on over to Amazon.com and go looking for The Scathing Atheist and the Diatribes book. Trust me, you'll enjoy it later. We'll come back to that in a little bit. All right, we're getting down to the very end of it all, so let's go ahead and tackle the question that Ross has given to us. And this is going to be a little bit tough to try and squeeze in this time, so I'm going to hit you guys really quickly as we get through all of this. And by the way, Joe, thank you for joining us.
Yes, hey, Joe.
The question is, can you measure, quote, just law, unquote, according to any scientific measure or only through another perspective? Is it unreal? And clarified this as like wisdom. So I'm gonna let you guys have at it because I'm gonna have my my piece at the end of it all. Who wants to have first crack at this one? By the way,
I'll volunteer if nobody else wants to.
Go for it.
Okay, Ross, you're treading on slippery slope again. Not in that you've asked a bad question. You've actually asked a good question, but it requires a lot of defining, like wisdom. People have been asking the question, what is wisdom, for a very long time, and we have better definitions of it now than we probably have for a long time. But, you know, when we have a course of action or reaction that is considered wise now, it might not be considered wise a year later because of a paradigm shift or a shift in zeitgeist. What was maybe a wise course of action 100 years ago is no longer wise now, or even considered bigotry now, or racism, or sexism, or any of those other isms that nobody seems to like. So wisdom changes over time based upon the society and the people within it. You could have a just law that the measurable effects of it right now can be wise. But that same law, because of societal changes 300 years from now, still being implemented, when it goes into effect, when its effects are measured, this is stupid. Why are we still doing this? This is 300 years old. We don't need this anymore. Like, there is actually a law in one of the northern states. I think it's either New England or New York or something like that.
New England.
Where
state.
If a man marries a woman who is a virgin and they are married and they go to a hotel, the hotel is not allowed to give them a room with a single bed. They must have separate beds. They must sleep in separate beds. They cannot have sex on the same bed. The beds must be a specific measurement apart from each other, and they are not allowed to have sex on the floor either between the beds. This is a very old law that is Puritan in nature. This law does not make sense. It is no longer a wise law, but it is still in our legal books. It has not been absolved or removed. So, like I said, just and wisdom, these things, these definitions, change over time based upon the needs of society and the people within them and the world around them. So, but can it be measured? Yes, absolutely. The effects can always be measured of these laws. They may be small effects, or they may have grand repercussions, but there will always be an effect to measure. We call that statistics.
Oh, that goes back to something we talked about a couple of weeks back. Mm-hmm. Witchy, go.
Tech actually put that rather succinctly. I mean, you know, again, it depends on what you consider real. And, I mean, as much as I kind of did a very tongue-in-cheek example of you know, what you consider real with Shuzhen here a little bit ago, it's a very important distinction to make. I don't know, does just law have an effect on reality? To any scientific measure? Well, let's see. Just law in Missouri or Minnesota, or one of those Northern M states right now, is that a business can discriminate based on the sexual orientation of its patrons. That is not, that will have a measured effect on things in that state. Just law in Tucson, Arizona is that a woman's not allowed to wear pants, technically.
Good luck with
Seriously, I broke the law every damn day.
Yeah, they don't actually enforce that one, but it is on the legal books.
It is on the legal books. There's a lot of things that's considered wisdom. You basically have to go by, well, what is it for right now? What is considered wisdom? What's considered just? I'm called back to the famous words, I think it was of a Supreme Court judge, which about pornography and I can't even think of the word right now, but the basic comment was, I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it.
It was about
obscenity.
Obscenity, yes, exactly.
It was about obscenity. So it's like, well, I mean, did that have a measured effect on what's considered obscene, on things throughout our society? Well, yeah. And it was through, you can measure by a scientific measure, in other words, in statistics and, you know, that type of thing, but it's also through a personal perspective. So, yeah, actually, you totally can measure it.
Okay.
On Witchy Bunny's point about obscenity, if you want to watch a movie about something that happened in our history, relatively short period of time ago, that deals with the differences of definition of obscenity in art and other forms, watch The People versus Larry Flint.
Yes, good point on that. We have to see about that sometime.
Watch it with an open mind.
Okay. Dal, throw it over to you before I cap this off.
I think I'm going to be rounding out the panel here and basically agreeing with both what Tech and Witchy have said. Wisdom is subjective. It is subjective in that what I learn and what I gain as wisdom is going to be different from what everybody else does. Now, to put that into the perspective of a lawmaker, they are going to fashion laws based on, I would say, ideally, two criteria. What is going to most benefit society in terms of protection, prosperity, etc., but also, what does their own wisdom say? Like their wisdom would be an equivalent of the God of the Gaps, so to speak. Anything where there's a sort of a question of, does this benefit society as a whole? Will it protect them? Will it allow them to prosper, etc., etc.? If there's any question about that, the lawmaker could say, okay, what have I gone through in my life? Therefore, what from my own wisdom can I contribute to this to say whether the law is going to be this way or that way? Now, of course, it's not just one person. We also have wisdom by committee. But each one of the members of that committee also has their own individual wisdom. So again, it is subjective, although in some cases you can find commonalities. So that creates the law. Now, can we measure the law itself based on that? I don't know. But like Tech and Witchy have said, we measure its effects. And in an ideal society, upon measuring those effects for a certain amount of time, you go back, you reevaluate, you self-correct. But again, I think you can only measure the effects of just law rather than measure just law itself, if that makes any sense at all. I fault my sobriety on this.
That's okay. We'll see what we can do about that one. For myself, can you measure just law according to any scientific measure or only through another perspective? I think you can do both. As far as to what qualifies as a just law to me qualifies, has to be identified under the terms of cost and benefit. How much cost in punishment must be meted out in order to get the benefit of it not happening again, and teaching as many people as possible that this is not the good way to do things. Now, as we discussed at the top of the whole thing, rats themselves, laboratory rats, bred specifically for the purpose of going through experimentation, have shown that they can behave in such a fashion where they help each other out and then share in the benefits of. And that's in rats who have no discernible language or societal structures that qualifies even close to what we determine and consider societal abilities. But even they, and even other species, have shown to have similar abilities and similar ideas and similar ideals. What qualifies as just? That's a real hard one, because you start to come into the ideas of, is it just to take somebody who is using a recreational chemical that is shown to have less side effects, fewer side effects, less powerful side effects, less destructive side effects than another chemical, and say you've been caught doing this 3 times, you're put away for the rest of whatever because society deems that it's bad. Am I specifically singling out 2 specific types of chemicals for recreational purposes? Yes. Am I naming them? No. For 2 good reasons. 1, chances are, if you've been listening to any of the news that's been going on over the last few years, the last few months even, you've heard about this here in the United States. And 2, as time goes on, those arguments are going to change to other sets of chemicals for recreational purposes. It will continue to change. It will continue to evolve. And the voices will continue to change timbre and color on which items they're talking about. That's where the wisdom comes in. Because to me, wisdom when you're dealing with the law has got everything to do with the God of the Gaps argument that Dallin was talking about. When you don't have the information, when you are ignorant about different pieces of what could happen depending as to what you say is right and wrong, and not having the information in those holes, wisdom is the ability to look at those holes and judge them based on everything that you've learned so far, all of the history that you've understood, all the past happenstances, and putting a temporary patch over those pieces of missing knowledge towards a better end. Whether you're right or wrong, you try, you make as good a guess as possible to get to the better piece on the other side of the bridge that you've constructed for yourself and for the society that you represent. Does it always happen? Hell no. We've seen many a time when those have absolutely not worked correctly. And I'm specifically thinking of Dred Scott. If you're unfamiliar with the Dred Scott decision, again, I will link the Wikipedia article in the description for this so you can read it over. It is arguably one of the blackest moments, no pun intended, of these United States and its laws and the highest court basically thumbing its nose. It was truly a reprehensible moment, and one that many people don't even think about and arguably have never even studied. Dallin, for instance, would not have studied this in school for a good reason, because he can't find his own home state on a map. But I digress. There's a story about that one. I will see about linking that one also in the description. It will make sense later, I promise you. But I'm getting us to the end of this all, and I need to basically wrap this up. Is a just law real or unreal? By the statistics, a just law is both. You can find out by the statistics, is somebody brought back in again? What was the term? Redifism? I forget what the right word for it is. If somebody does the same bad time and again, and it gets prosecuted and convicted of the same thing over and over again, do things work out better for society via different measures? Can that stuff be measured? Yeah. But then, as we've also discussed before, data doesn't lie. What you decide those pieces of data means, however, can be almost anybody's guess. So, with that in mind, that one is not something that we can easily answer, and I don't know that anybody really can. Because when you start to deal with just laws, you have to deal with just punishment. And the idea of just punishment, when you start to deal with capital punishment, becomes a show all unto its own. Probably three or more, because there's a lot to try to unpack with all that, and we ain't going to do that now. Sometime in the future, we'll very likely do that. But we're going to have to wait and see. With that, there is, as usual, a lot to really consider on that one, and by no means are we bringing that one to a close, but the show itself, unfortunately, does have to. As always, I would like to thank the panel for taking the time out with us. Dallin, thank you very kindly for your time this evening.
Oh, thanks for having me. I hope to be a little bit more of a regular this time around, at least as Saturdays allow.
Fair enough. Unrenowned Tech, thank you.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Witchy Bunny, thank you for your time, hon.
Always my pleasure, Shujin.
And on behalf of the panel, of course, I am Shujin Tribble. I look forward to all the comments that you folks have got. If I do not necessarily chime in on something that you write in the YouTube comments, please forgive me. I'm still trying to understand how to see the comments on a YouTube vid. Sometimes time goes on and I haven't realized that a comment has happened. So if you need to poke me, for instance, on Facebook or Twitter or Skype or G+, please, by all means, feel free. And of course, you can hit me on email. If you have a comment, suggestion for a topic, hit me as shujintribble@gmail.com, and please, in the subject line, do put holy crap, and we'll see what we can do about all that stuff. Of course, we're hoping to have more and more people joining us. If you would like to get updates, notices as holy crap goes on, please send me a request over on G+ to put me into circles, and then please remind me, please add me to the holy crap group, so that you'll get invitations specifically to the shows as they happen. We thank you very much for your time, of course, of making it through the entire show. And, of course, I would be completely remiss if I did not thank Thomas and the Bible, the Scathing Atheist, the Thinking Atheist, Atheist Experience of Austin, the Nonprofits. Thank God I'm Atheist, Frank and Dan over there. Which, by the way, yes, as I mentioned at the top of the show, if you've heard episode 100 or 99, you would have heard me being referred to as Sparkle Darkle Pony. Somebody on Second Life today actually sent me a message and said, "Are you actually..." Yes, yes, I am him. He is me. And I'm not doing the rest of that song. And we look forward to seeing all of the comments that you guys have got and more of the questions that you guys have got. Because this is not just fun, it's learning. And that really means a lot. We look forward to seeing you guys for the next time that we go down these rabbit holes. And I would be completely and utterly remiss if I did not thank Frank, who went ahead and told me, don't be talking these things. And of course, many thank yous to the Amish Wolverine, because it would be bad if I didn't go ahead.
Don't forget the X-Men and Knights.
Yes. Until the very next time we get together, everyone, thank you. We look forward to seeing you next week. And of course, my lady, I love you. Dream of me. We'll see you all the very next time we get together. As always, on behalf of the crew, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until that very next time we get together, everyone,
you've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+ pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. and behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.